actually see some clarity and some justice achieved.
Sebastian Rotella, I want to thank you for being with us, senior reporter for the investigative news website ProPublica. His latest piece, which we will link to, is headlined Alberto Nisman and Argentina's History of Assassinations and Suspicious Suicides.
Thank you.
And that does it for our show. Today is the 19th anniversary of the first radio broadcast of Democracy Now! From the studios of WPFW in Washington, D.C. Now we broadcast on over 1,300 television and radio stations across the globe and reach millions of viewers and listeners through our website at democracynow.org. Go to our website to listen to our first program that aired the day before the 1996 New Hampshire primary. Thanks so much to our staff, our stations, and our audience for making Democracy Now! Possible. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Martin Nermin, Shakespeare, Martinez, Sam Alcock, Honey Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gester, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Special thanks to Julie Crosby.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is retired Oregon Supreme Court Justice Paul de Muniz, who will tell us about the newly formed Community Oversight and Advisory Committee for our Portland Police Bureau.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater February 21st and the 22nd at 7 p.m. Starring Denzel Washington, this biographical film about Malcolm X by Spike Lee will be playing to honor the 50th anniversary of Malcolm X assassination. That's the film, Malcolm X, playing at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland, on Saturday, February 21st, and Sunday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ear to the streets. Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kboo.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm.
Follow KBOO on Instagram at KBOO Radio. Ear to the streets.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Unjust Treatment. The Portland police killing of James Chassie on February 24th, 7 p.m. at the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue Community Room in Aloha. The film Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chassie, will be shown and followed by a question and answer session with Jim Chassie, father of James Chassie Jr. Again, that's Unjust Treatment, the Portland police killing of James Chassie, on February 24th, 7 p.m. at the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue Community Room, 20665 Southwest Blanton Street in Aloha. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get up, stand up. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today. Before I bring on retired Justice Paul de Muniz, I want to tell you about a couple of upcoming events that I think you may be interested in. Oregon Humanities has a whole host of race and policing forums that are taking place around the Portland metro area. I wanted to bring to your attention the upcoming one this Saturday from 4 to 5:30 at the Center for Intercultural Organizing. There will be a facilitated discussion around race and policing. On Friday, February 27th, I will have the pleasure to participate in a Portland City Club program Friday form called Can Portland's Police Really Change? That will take place at the Centennial Hotel. The program starts at 12:15. Doors open at 11:30. For more info on this, you can go to the OregonHumanities.org website to get more info or contact City Club of Portland. I also wanted to remind you that on Monday, February 23rd, Arresting Power will be playing at the Hollywood Theater. And you may know Arresting Power is a powerful documentary that was created about police violence in Portland. And so the first time they showed it, they sold out. And so I'd encourage you to go online and get your ticket before Monday because they will sell out again. I am so pleased to have with us today the Honorable Paul J. DeMunez. He is a distinguished jurist in residence. He's a graduate of Willamette University and Portland State University. The Honorable Paul DeMunez was elected to the Oregon Supreme Court in 2000 and served as the court's chief justice and administrative head of the Oregon Judiciary Department from January 2006 until May 2012. Between 1990 and 2000, he sat on the Oregon Courts of Appeal and served as presiding judge on one of the three panels that comprised that body. Prior to ascending to the bench, Judge DeMunez was in private practice for 13 years in Salem, Oregon, law firm of Garrett Snyderman, Herman Robertson, and DeMunez, where he specialized in complex criminal and civil litigation, as well as appeals. From 1975 to 1977, he was a deputy public defender for the state of Oregon. In November of 2011, Judge DeMunez was inducted into the National Center for State Courts Warren E. Burger Society in recognition of his commitment to improving the administration of justice within the states. In addition to his work with Oregon, he also is a member of the Conference of Chief Justices and was elected to the Board of Directors in 2008. He is on the Board of Trustees for the National Judicial College and recently completed a three-year term as a member of the Harvard Kennedy School Executive Session for State Court Leaders in the 21st century. In 2002, Judge DeMunez founded a rule of law partnership with judicial leaders in the Russian Far East, working with lawyers and judges in Russia to implement reforms within the Russian criminal justice system. I could spend the next 15 minutes reading Judge DeMunez's resume, but I would much rather talk to him and welcome him to the program. Good morning, sir. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. Thank you. That was indeed a nice introduction and way too long.
Well, but it was important for people to know who you are. So thank you. I appreciate you joining me today. And as we announce, you are, actually, why don't you tell the public what your position is with the Community Oversight Advisory Board and how you got there?
Okay. So some a little background. I'm going to say, Joanne mentioned the Community Oversight Advisory Board. That concept grows out of the settlement agreement between the Federal Department of Justice and the City of Portland. But that concept got into that settlement agreement, at least under my research, I believe, from ideas generated by yourself, which I think is incredibly impressive. So the settlement agreement has a community oversight board, and it also has a concept called the compliance officer and community liaison, or the acronym is the COCL. And so I was contacted by Dr. Rosenbaum and Dr. Watson, who are professors involved in police science at the University of Illinois in Chicago, to work with them as, and I consider my role as the community liaison part of the the COCAL, if you will. And so I consider my job is outreach to the community, working with the acronym now is the COAB, the Community Oversight Advisory Board, and working with the Portland Police Bureau, particularly in the area of community outreach and engagement.
Wonderful. And my listening audience understands the settlement agreement, so they know that the Department of Justice came to town, they did an investigation, and this negotiated settlement agreement prevented us from actually going to court to determine whether or not Portland police were involved in use of excessive force against people with or perceived to have mental health issues. And so you are... So you were going to open an office in East Portland. Did you do that?
Correct. Well, we're in the process right now. We've had some obstacles. I wanted to locate us in Rosewood,
right?
The Rosewood Initiative. But we've had some trouble trying to get an office erected there, just given the nature of that building. So I've been actually working the last few days out of an office on 47th and East Burnside. I've been working out of there.
Uh-huh. And is that, are you planning that for your community office, or are you still looking for a space in East Portland? Because you promised us.
Still looking, but I need a place to work.
Right, right.
And so that's turned out to be an actual, very helpful, and there's a good deal of privacy there. We can secure the computers and that sort of thing, which we were having a difficult time doing. So that wasn't my first choice, but that's where I'm working right now.
And so what is your role in this settlement agreement?
Okay. Well, I let me give you this background. When I got involved in this, I did as much research as possible about other civil actions that had been brought by the Department of Justice against cities, for example, Seattle, Oakland, a variety of cities, and in none of those consent decrees was there a COAB or a COCAL.
Right.
So this is a completely new concept. And so I think that one of my roles is to make out of it a true voice of the community, that this is probably the first opportunity in the United States for true citizen involvement in shaping the kind of policing that the community wants and demands. In other words, instead of the police coming to the community and saying, hey, we've got an outreach and engagement plan here, this is our plan. As I really read the settlement agreement and breathe life into it, it's the community having a very strong voice in working with the police to say, this is what the community outreach and engagement plan should look like. This is the kind of policing that needs to be in our city.
Judge DeMunez, I have a question about kind of how do you, I was at the first Community Oversight Advisory Board meeting. There's a excellent mix of community members. For folks that don't know, five people were appointed by a community panel, five were appointed by the city council, five no voting members were appointed by the police bureau, and five members were appointed by jointly by the Human Rights Commission and the Disability Rights Commission. And so there are 20 people, there's about 25 people with the alternates that are a part of this committee. And they come from all different walks of life. And so I'm wondering if, A, you have seen both Alien Boy and Arresting Powers, and B, whether or not it's a good grounding, you believe, for the Community Oversight Advisory Board.
Okay. Both of those movies are on my schedule.
All right.
So that now that's your first. That was
right. That was part one. Right.
I think the first part of your question, or in, even if it wasn't a question, I would like to say that I have probably, in nearly 40 years of law practice and involvement with the criminal justice system, I have never before been involved with such a diverse group of people, every one of whom is dedicated.
Yes.
And when we say we're dedicated to what we're doing, we're still working out how that's all going to work.
Right.
Because it's not been done before. But the voices, the backgrounds, the experience that are gathered around that table is, I would have to say, probably unique in the United States.
I would agree with you on that. I will also say that you have an invitation from me to come to Arresting Powers on Monday, February 23rd, at the Hollywood Theater at 7 p.m. There will be a talk back afterwards. And I would also invite any of the COAB members and the Chicago team, because I think they especially need some grounding in what's happened in Oregon.
Well, it's already on my list. I will be there.
Yay. Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
When I am working in Portland, I stay just up the street at my mother-in-law's house. I grew up in that neighborhood.
Very good.
So I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there.
Well, wonderful. And I guess we should let people know that this is not the only dog and pony show that we will do. Because you and I will be on a panel at the Neighborhood Summit. We are in it together on Saturday, February 28th at the, I'm going to forget the name of that center. Do you remember?
No, I don't, but it's on my calendar.
It's okay. I'll look it up. I will look it up before this program is over, and I will also post it on my Facebook page and the website for KBOO. If you're just joining us, I am talking with Paul DeMunez, and he is a retired Oregon Supreme Court justice who has just taken on the role, well, in the last couple of months or so, of being the chair of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, which was put together to actually manage the implementation of the settlement agreement and to make sure that we actually are fixing issues that are broken within Portland Police Bureau. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so when people found out I was going to talk to you today, people started sending me all kind of emails saying, ask them this, ask them that, ask them the other. And so I am going to take some of those questions. For example, someone asked me to ask about the mental health specialist who I understand was recently hired to support the work of the COAB, but they have no mental health background. And so I guess the question that they wanted me to ask is, was that a good decision, or how does somebody without a mental health background work on work with the COAB to determine whether or not the changes that we're making actually work for people who are suffering from mental health crises?
Well, I don't know about that part, because the way in which this works is under the settlement agreement, the city of Portland is required to administratively support the COAB and the COCAL, and so the hiring policies and the and that involvement took place outside of my sphere. The person doesn't work for me. We're truly independent. I'm not a city employee, and so that's a difficult question. Let me say this though: I think everybody who is involved in this is working at this in good faith, wanting to do the best job we can, and so we all have to rally around and support one another. One of the things that I'm hoping to do is to have another less formal meeting, one that doesn't discuss policy, but one that all of us have a chance to just relate to one another and understand how we're all approaching life and things. So I hope that all works out.
Well, on that same, I guess on that same track, how are you and the Chicago team, are you guys, I would like to know more about just how you see, I mean, you're a local person, the other contractors are from Chicago, and so they fly in periodically to do their piece. How do you see the two pieces working cooperatively together?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just on a very practical point, I literally talk and email with them daily. So there's in the world we live in today, that distance is not necessarily a difficulty in terms of communicating. I see this way. Dr. Rosenbaum has devoted much of his professional life to the study of policing. Dr. Watson is one of the country's leading experts in studying the relationship between the police and people perceived or suffering from a mental health crisis. So they have the matrix, the measure. I see them in their role as the measuring part of all of the reforms. And Joanne, I can't remember the number now, but it's 85 pages.
Yes.
Is it 190 numbered paragraphs or something?
Something close to that. I think 187 to be exact.
Yeah. So I think that certainly part of their role is the testing and determining the outcomes. In other words, are these reforms that are contemplated in the settlement agreement, are they implemented consistent with the intent of the settlement agreement, and do they meet the best practices in each one of those areas? But to me, in addition to that, what is, I think, quite brilliant about the settlement agreement is the community oversight piece that we're talking about, the COAB and the actual engagement with the PPB in the community outreach and engagement plan. While it's hugely important to measure all of these things and to be able to determine, you know, using scientific principles and outcome determinative things, but we have got to get the community piece correct.
I absolutely agree with that, Judge DeMunas. And one question that comes up because of that, I absolutely agree we have to get the community part right. But I guess a big concern is how we collect the data, who collects the data, and what data is appropriate to collect. We had the conversation with the Chicago team that they want to use the same evaluators that the Portland Police Bureau has used in the past, which from a community perspective is very troubling because of the very close relationship that Portland Police Bureau has had with the Oregon Criminal Justice Department at Portland State University. So we did talk to the Chicago team about this, and they seem to be more concerned with swiftness than accuracy. And so as our community liaison, what is your role to make sure that they are really listening to what the community has to say?
Well, you can be guaranteed that I'm not shy about speaking my mind about these issues, and I think they're still in flux.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a concern that we all have to work hard to try to meet the timelines that are set out in the settlement agreement, because that's part of, I think all of us would agree that that's part of showing the serious nature of this in getting those things done.
Could I stop you for just a sec? Because I would say that I think the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division would change the timeline if you were going to do something that made sense, right?
Well, that may be so. Yeah, that may be so.
Yeah, because I don't think that just because we have a 90-day timeline, it means that we just use the you know, the low-hanging fruit. So
I suspect assuming that the Department of Justice sees the good faith and progress that's being made, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to stand in the way of some extensions or changes that have to go along.
Right.
Because I think all of us know we have to get this right. And if you think about this, this could become a national model around the country for how to truly create a culture of accountability, how to truly create the kind of policing that a community wants. And so I agree with you. We have to get it right. And if it takes a little, you know, some adjusting, so be it.
Judge, you have a book that you recommend that everyone reads that's in its second edition. What is the name of that book?
I think the one you're talking about was by Samuel Walker.
Yes.
And that the name of that was, I think it was like The New World of Police Accountability.
And you think this is a good book, a good model?
I thought it's a backgrounding.
Uh-huh. It's good.
I thought it was a good backgrounding. I ordered it and read it. I also ordered a previous book by him also that was fairly, it was maybe 10 years old, but I also read it because it was about community oversight and some of those things. I recently circulated to all of the COAB members a paper that I got sent to me from somebody at the Kennedy School at Harvard about policing.
Wonderful.
That I found interesting.
Ah, so good. So that means any resources that you come in contact with, you're sharing with the COAB, and I will just call it the Community Oversight Advisory Board because I know how crazy-making it is for folks when you use acronyms and people don't know what you're talking about. So we're going to go to the phone line. We have a call. Hello, Don. Don, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm Chief Justice. I'm a little bit skeptical, and I'm an advocate for men with disabilities, so I'll tell you, let me give you two reasons. First, you said you never saw Alien Boy?
I have not yet. It's on my schedule to see.
Yeah. Well, it's been out for quite a few years, so that's really disappointing. And the second thing is, you know, do you think it was appropriate for the Chief Justice to have his picture all chummy with the District Attorney of Washington County on the District Attorney's webpage? Because doesn't that create the appearance of impropriety? Because you're supposed to be kind of neutral, yet you're on the page all chummed up with this district attorney from Washington County who has a thing called the isolation dungeon where he tortures people.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Don.
Your face, your picture was on with Bob Herman on his website for years. And that creates an appearance of impropriety.
I'd never even seen it.
Well, that's not... I cannot believe they put someone as like you on this thing. You don't even know your picture's on the page with a guy who tortures people to get plea bargains. You're disgusting.
Okay, thank you.
Well, so I guess the question, you said you did not know your picture was on a web page. When you're a public person, that happens sometimes. Actually,
sure.
When I'm out at places, I make sure that I ask people, are these campaign pictures? Are you going to be using my picture in your campaign just to make sure that kind of situation doesn't happen? But let's get back to like the community. A lot's going to depend on this Community Oversight Advisory Board's ability to really get out and engage regular community people in police reform.
Correct.
And And whether that means either the mandated town hall meetings or building relationships, I understand that you're going to have office hours so that people can come and drop in or make appointments to come and spend time with you. And that's going to happen starting when?
The sooner the better. But I also see my role as going out to meet with the groups. I don't necessarily think they have to come to me.
Right.
So as you and I have been talking, and I'm waiting for your list.
I'm working on it. If you get me an intern, I could get it done a lot faster. And so the list, you're looking for a list of community-based organizations.
Assembling a list of community-based organizations, and I will start reaching out to, I think there may be 200 and some. And so I feel my job, they don't have to come to me. Certainly I will have schedules where people can come, but I think my role is not to make them come to me, but to go to them.
Well, and I know one question that I have to ask. Your contract says that after the first 6 months, you go to one day a week. And so as the community is really anxious about what does that mean, especially when the other team lives in Chicago.
I don't really read it that way.
Oh, what did?
I think if you look at the contract, it says 150 days a year. And so I think that was just an estimate that they were thinking things wouldn't be as extensive as once we got going. But I'm not so sure that's correct with all the groups that we see.
I certainly don't think that's accurate. Yeah.
So my commitment is to get the job done. Simple as that.
And what is the? How will you know that you are being successful in this effort?
It's a very good question. I think I don't know how soon we will know. Obviously. I think key words here are sustainability, and so that I think understanding whether you have sustained organizational change takes you're not going to know that overnight, but I think one of the key aspects to this is, I'll give you an example, I'm going to a community or a youth forum on Monday, March 3rd at De La Salle North Catholic. So this will be with high school students. I think we have to do tremendous outreach to youth. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we're not going to know immediately. And I think this goes back also to Joanne, when you thought of these ideas, mm-hmm. I suspect that you didn't think we would know immediately whether we're successful.
No, that's absolutely true. But I would hope that we would see every year we would be able to point to very concrete changes that have taken place. And I think the biggest challenge right now is the previous police chief said he was 85% done. But the only people who'd ever looked at the 85% done are within the Portland Police Bureau. And so now the community actually has an opportunity to start unpacking that, right? Really, what did he accomplish? Even though all those pretty PowerPoint presentations he made about being almost done with the settlement agreement before it was even filed with the federal court challenged us.
There's no question that the COCAL people are experts, that there has to be a complete and thorough analysis and the collection of the data. And Tom Kristoff, one of the members of the COCAL, is here almost, I don't know if it's every week, but is a real digging into the data. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I think the other side of that is how do we measure the outcomes? That's the key point here. How do we measure the outcomes?
So, Judge Domínguez, I think there's another piece is accessibility of the decision makers in this process. So as you said, you're going to go out and meet with people. But I do believe that we've raised the expectation that there will be a storefront that community members can come in to get information and to be engaged in the process. And I want to keep putting you on the spot because you promised East Portland, because that's one of the most neglected neighborhoods in the city of Portland and the one that is experiencing aggressive policing. And so it is vital to have a storefront in East Portland that people can come into and share their experiences. So I put my plug in. I'm going back to the phone line.
Work in progress.
Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you.
I first just want to say, and I'm sure everyone has said it a million times, I am appreciative of this effort, and I'm also quite disappointed that in the Justice Department investigation, racial profiling was just totally left out of this whole scenario. But besides that, and not no offense to your guest, I don't understand why a chairman of a committee that's supposed to be a liaison with the community would have to do so much research and find out what's going on in the community. I think a way to measure the outcomes is to see how the community feels about the new changes and if it has made a difference to them as far as how the police interact with them. Mm-hmm. I just don't see a lot. I know there is some, but the representation of the community who already knows what the problem is, they wouldn't have to be doing a lot of interviews to figure out what the problem is. And people who already know what the data is and it's already there, where are they? Are they on this committee? Are they, who's chairing the, you're chairing the committee, your guest is.
Yes.
I just feel like it's the same old thing where we're going to have people, good, well-meaning professional people, go through the numbers again and come up with, you know, oh dear, this is not working, but
Francis,
not figure out
answer,
how to make it work, how to Francis, make it work.
Francis,
anyway.
Let me answer that for you.
I
think you should come to a meeting. The people who are sitting around that table are come from lived experiences. They're the folks that you're talking about.
Right.
And they have a voice now.
Yeah, I heard somebody say that they were on there and they're waiting to be in a position of authority like other people are. That there's the layers of authority in this process are what they're concerned about.
Say more about that, Francis. What do you mean, the layers of, what do you mean?
How she put it was, when am I going to have the same status as that person there? It's like there's already this I don't know how to explain it.
Divide?
A process that, although people's input is recorded and heard, the decision-making is still somewhere else. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, no.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, I mean, actually, Francis, I hope, especially you, because I know how active you've been over the years, it is my hope that you participate, that you come to the meetings that you can.
One thing that's a problem here is that I moved out of Portland.
Well, that's
so
okay. You still have a whole lifetime.
I'm a former community member.
Right. Yeah, you got a whole lifetime of history in this community that would help educate the Community Oversight Advisory Board. But I also hear that there are concerns. I mean, certainly whenever you have police on a committee that's looking at how do you reform the police, people get concerned about that. The good news is that they're coming in their street clothes as compared to their uniform, so they're a bit less.
That's a change already. I can remember going to some meetings where we were just surrounded by officers with their guns in their pockets.
Yes,
you know, I was like, well, okay.
And Joanne, I think it's important for Francis to know they're also non-voting members.
Yes, that is true. The police do not vote. But it doesn't mean they don't take up air in the room. They just don't vote. So I would encourage you to come. I would encourage you to tell other people to come. This is the very beginning of this process, right?
Right.
So what we do now will matter for the next 5 years.
One day we may address racial profiling the way it should be.
So let me respond to that. Actually, I was very pleased to hear members of the committee say that will be part of the bylaws that they're developing. There was a rabbi that said, and I quote, If we don't put it in the bylaws, we won't address it.
Right.
Unquote.
That's
so,
exactly right.
So know that there are people around that table that share your worldview and are pushing to make that happen.
All right. Thank you a lot.
You are very welcome.
The current draft, the second draft that we're working on, includes in it and police interactions with people perceived by PPB officers to be or who are racial minorities. So we're starting to address that issue, get it into the bylaws.
Excellent. We have another caller on the line. Hello, Leah. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. I'm a longtime listener to you, and I'm remembering when we first came up with the information that we were going to have a group coming out, and they were coming out with Chicago.
Yes.
From Chicago.
Right.
And I remembered your concerns. I'm also, cognizant of all the years we've talked about this issue with our police.
Yes.
And seen what's happened. And I'm a past recovery person. I worked in the field of recovery and counseling. And for years, I have a degree, a bachelor's in, so I'm pretty well educated. That's what I'm kind of listening for here, and I'm hearing a little bit of that. So one of the things I would like to say to you is those issues you put on the plate when we first heard about this, and the gentleman who came, the judge who came out here, and the committee that's working, that's real important.
Please watch the language. We're on the air. Okay. Judge DeMunez?
Yeah, I'm not sure what response you're looking for. I agree with you in terms of having read the settlement agreement, having done the research, the issues you're talking about, I believe, are on the forefront of people's minds who are sitting at that table now.
Well, I think they are too. I mean, I guess the question will be, as this rolls out, what I love is that you're taking the time to get the bylaws right, so that which is the governing document about how the committee will work together and what they will work on during this time period. So I think that is a critical document to get buy-in on. And so I'm not quite sure what the caller was referring to. I mean, clearly, the community still has some concerns about having a team out of Chicago. Because of the additional costs that we're paying to bring folks, fly folks in and out of Chicago and put them up in hotels. I mean, but that was a decision that you didn't make and I didn't make. The Portland City Council made that decision, which I still think was the worst possible decision they could have made, but they made it. And so we have to live with the decision that they made. But now you are the community face. And you are going to be the one that people are going to be turning to here locally to find out what's really happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so any insight into how I think this first year is going to probably be the most critical in this process and actually building trust, building community support, and building an opportunity for a flow of information. And
yeah.
So... How do you see this rolling out? I mean, because even in my mind, I'm not sure what happens after the bylaws happen.
Well, I think that I have a structure that I've been working on with one of the COAB members for how we analyze the work, mm-hmm. and what we do, and we'll work on that at our next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're dividing into subcommittees. We've had the process of starting to select, asking people to volunteer for various subcommittees. So we'll start rolling out the work plan. It'll be geared to the settlement agreement. But I just can't repeat enough how important I think the community outreach and engagement part is.
I think you're absolutely right with that. And as you were talking, it occurred to me that there were 127 applicants for five seats on the Community Oversight Advisory Board. And so my understanding, and I didn't hear this at the COAB meeting, the Community Oversight Advisory Board meeting, but my understanding was those applicants that were not chosen could be chosen to serve on subcommittees. And so the goal is to not overwhelm the 20 plus five people who are on the COAB, but to also take advantage of community expertise. Am I right that
we have to be able to do our work.
Yes.
I think you stated that very well. We can't overwhelm that. But because the overriding point here is the hearing of community voices, mm-hmm. I think as we go along, we'll keep perfecting how we do that. Mm-hmm. But I see it as we outreach to the community, we work on getting all of those voices heard, and we continue to start the process and continue to work through getting this community outreach and engagement plan in place.
Well, Judge Domenez, I hope that your outreach program becomes a model for how outreach is done in the city of Portland, because unfortunately, whether we're talking the U.S. attorney, whether we're talking the city of Portland, whether we're talking to Portland Police Bureau, there's a mindset that if we posted on our website, we've done public involvement. That has never worked. It never will work. And so I'm hoping that the model that you design is a model that can be replicated throughout the city. I think one of the things I want to go back to, you had mentioned in the bylaws that there was some line about racial minorities.
Well, I said we're trying to get at, I think the settlement agreement includes issues of race.
I do too.
And so that's what we're trying to figure out.
Especially as it relates to data collection, because
yeah.
That's another piece that the committee hasn't actually looked at yet, right? But
right.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I guess the term racial minorities is what annoyed me.
How do you have a suggestion?
Well, I mean, I would say that part of the role, if I was writing the bylaws, I would say that part of the role of the COAB is to ensure that data is collected and the demographic information, including race, sex, age, is collected for all interactions that Portland police have. The DOJ in their investigation recommended that Portland police collect all that data. Right now, Portland police has a category called walk-in talk or mirror conversations, where the bulk of their traffic stops fall into. And it is a huge trap, because we don't know the demographic breakdown. We know, but it's not recorded. And so if we're going to deal with how race impacts policing, we can't do that without tracking every person that police stop and interact with. Now, and you and I've had this conversation before, right? Because
right.
Mere conversation, as far as law is concerned, is not considered a traffic stop.
Well, you don't have to use the word traffic.
Right.
It's not considered a stop,
right? However, what we know is
right.
that black and brown kids are not going to turn their back on a police officer and not respond to the request of, let me see your ID, let me look in your backpack, can I search you, where are you going, and answer all those questions. Now, from where I sit, that looks like a stop. It acts like a stop.
Here's a better word. So, for example, we have in our draft now, and these, you know, this has to be wordsmithed, but
right.
Collaborate with Portland community groups and PPB in evaluating PPB's efforts to enhance PPB's demographic data collection regarding the subjects of police encounters.
Yes, encounters. I like that.
Okay.
Encounters or interactions, yes.
Yeah, well, I think the word encounters captures where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, including subjects' race, age, sex, and perceived mental health status, and report on PPB's efforts to the DOJ.
Yes. Yes, and that comes right out of the settlement agreement.
Yeah, and that's in our that is in our bylaws right now in the draft that's being circulated.
Wonderful.
The racial minority comment comes in the general purpose, which was in response to the rabbi's comments in trying to include the purpose, not just the interactions between people who are perceived by PPB officers to be experiencing a mental health crisis, but also police interactions with people perceived by PPB officers to be or who are racial minorities. That's in the purpose section, not in the function section where we were talking about police encounters.
Right. And so we've got about seven more minutes left. I want to make sure if there's an invitation you want to give, if there's a website, people want more information, how do they connect with you?
They can connect through the website. We have a website up right now, which is in a temporary phase, but is being monitored. We've got a summary of the settlement agreement up there that I wrote. It's not in the quote legalese of the settlement agreement. It takes a little different approach that I think makes it more readable for the general public. The settlement agreement is up there. One of the things we're working on now, many of our COAB members are going to have requests for different data, information, documents. So I'm working to find a method by which we collect all of the requests for data. We get those posted on our website so all of the COAB members know, but as well as the public, of the information, documents, and records that we're requesting in connection with our work, the date those are requested, the date they're received. That's all part of our developing our outreach, but I think the crucial part, we're going to have town hall meetings, but I want to organize those in a way that we make sure that they're well-publicized. It's no good to have a town hall meeting if people don't know about it.
Right.
And so I think that's all part of our outreach to the public, is making sure that, as you said, that we go, and I'm taking this on myself. I'm not sure what the settlement folks contemplated, but for me, in taking this on, I'm going out to the communities and starting this process.
We have another caller on the line. Hello, Kenneth. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. In relation to what you were just discussing with what you described as what you felt was still a stop and frisk or a search and seize, the gentleman then came back with the word encounter, and what was it, one other word he used?
He used encounter, and I thought I had another word that escapes me now, but
maybe he recalls what that other word was.
Judge Jimenez, do you remember what I said when you changed me to encounter? I said stop. I think I was saying a stop.
Yeah, you said stop, and I understood the context. I was saying that I understand completely, because the Oregon Supreme Court, and I was part of it for years, has tried to objectify these contacts between the police and citizens, and they have mere conversation, stops, and then a full seizure. And my point was, if you're just collecting stop data, you're not collecting the conversation. And the better way to collect the data would say police
encounters.
Citizen encounters.
Mm-hmm. So are these so-called encounters in, are they something that the officers will also be recording from an audio device on their bodies?
So we're not talking about body cams, but we could have about a 30-second conversation on that. What we're talking about is right now today, you could go to Portland Police Bureau's website and see reports of traffic and pedestrian stops. And then what you would find is a category that says mere conversation, where there's about 4,700 of those that happen every year. And that's the gray area that the Department of Justice said should be calculated based on demographic information, right? Just like for all the other stops, we know the race of the individual that was stopped, the approximate age of the individual that was stopped. We have a lot of demographic information on them. And I assume that those mirror conversations are primarily youth of color. As I've observed those stops happening, they're not recorded as traffic stops or pedestrian stops. They're just mere conversation, even though kids are being searched, asked for ID, asked to identify where they're going, where they've been. It looks like a stop. It acts like a stop, but it's recorded as a mere conversation.
But then again, if this happened to be a minor with a pack of cigarettes, what is considered to be a marijuana a joint, then does it go into the enforcement?
Then it becomes a citation, right? Just like a traffic ticket, if a person is doing something that doesn't rise to the level of criminal behavior, but it is a citation.
Okay, so my question then would be for the young demographics, the middle-aged demographics, and the old demographics, we'll say minors and adults, we'll say my minor son, and we'll say my teenage son, and we'll say my adult son. Will any of these three, when in these areas of Portland which they live, whether it's, say it's an encounter, will they have the right to exercise their right to refuse to engage in this data collection of information going in?
Yes.
We all still maintain our anonymity to reserve our unalienable rights to have to talk to anybody in uniform or otherwise.
Judge Munoz, you want to answer that one?
I'm going to answer in two parts. Just listening to these are actually very, very relevant questions. The Oregon Supreme Court case law. It is founded on at least one part of it, on the premise that mere conversation between police and citizens, that a citizen is free to walk away. We don't have the time now to talk about what criticisms there might be of that in the real world.
Right.
Okay? That would be number one. But number two, the question raised about the body cameras is a very perceptive question about our rights as citizens. You know, I already had someone talk about my picture on some website somewhere from 2001 that I don't even know about.
Right.
I know that in the legislature now, there is work being done on bills that and laws that will have to regulate how we as citizens, what happens with our image. So, for example, if we're just a witness to something and there are body cameras, well, what use is made of our image or our children's image or whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm.
Those are really complicated questions and need to be addressed. And my understanding is that the legislature is working on that.
And let me say, I in no way think that body cams are going to do anything to keep the community safe from aggressive police action. I know that this particular Portland City Council is really trying to shove body cams down our throat as a quick fix to a very complex problem. unless the community has access to the film to sue police for inappropriate behavior, that one-way communication tool is not something that I would support in any way, shape, or form. And be careful, because I've watched the city council twice try to go out and buy body cams that they say they're not buying yet. They're just getting information. So be very careful. Keep your eye on the Portland City Council. Clearly, this mayor wants them, and it's a quick fix for a very complex problem. So I thank you for your call. I wish you'd have called earlier, because it sounded like you had a lot of things that Judge DeMunez and I could keep talking about. I will see you, Judge DeMunez, if not before, on Monday at the Hollywood Theater.
I'll see you Monday at the Hollywood Theater.
Excellent. You have a great day. Thank you for joining us. I'm Joanne Hardesty. Thank you, Steve. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold.
And good morning, 1 minute before 9 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. With a busy Thursday morning continuing, coming up in a half hour, join us for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with journalist Robert Perry of the Consortium News about Ukraine, plus the bizarre ascendancy of the neocons. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a look at the recent violent attacks against Muslims in the United States, an interview about the possible impact of the election of the left Syriza party in Greece on the U.S. economy, and a look at increasing numbers of self-immolation by Buddhist monks in Tibet. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones speaks with Joshua Samuel Brown, author of the new book, How Not to Avoid Jet Lag and Other Tales of Travel Madness. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, host Paul Rowland speaks with Helena Norberg Hodge, director of Local Futures, author of Ancient Futures, and producer of the Economics of Happiness film about the upcoming Economics of Happiness conference in Portland. That's all coming up this morning, but first, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with the news you're not supposed to know, and that is next on KBOO.